And joining us in the studio right now is Dave Laird. And Dave is the director of training at C2 Tactical, one of the larger facilities here in Arizona, a place that both Pamela and I have gone to and done training on different firearms. And so, Dave, it's great to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
I want to start with, and I think it's fair to say, in the debate, just in the last week, I've heard a lot of, terms thrown around that I don't believe people are fully aware of. And so I want to throw some terms at you and you help us, like, you know, you can like thumbs up, thumbs down on them. One of the things that's being bandied around right now is the weapon that the shooter used last week in Florida is referred to as an assault rifle. Is there such thing as an assault rifle?
No, there's never been a clear definition as to what you would call an assault rifle. The AR-15 that he used is the most popular sold firearm in the United States, and it's actually responsible for 0.01% of the deaths in the United States, so it's the least one used.
Okay.
But we'll get into discussions about that. we'll stick to the lingo right now. Okay, so we've got assault weapons, or not.
Well, I think the argument is, and I'm not trying to put words in Dave's mouth, assault is an action.
Correct.
The rifle is a rifle.
Well, right. The legal definitions vary state by state with that. But let's get to semi-automatic weapons. What constitutes a semi-automatic weapon?
So a semi-automatic means that each time I press a trigger, I get one bullet that comes out. I have to let go of the trigger, reapply my finger in order to make it shoot another bullet.
And that's pretty common. I want to say short. Give me an example of a non-semi-automatic weapon. Because most pistols, I'm like, you know, if you have people have heard of a Glock pistol.
Right.
I think they're all semi-automatic. We talk about an AR or some of these other rifles. They are semi-automatic. Every pull of the trigger is another round discharged. So are we talking like bolt action?
Yeah, you can say bolt action. I mean, according to that definition of one trigger press, one round, I mean, that really applies to just about every single firearm made.
Okay.
I lean towards saying that it loads by itself or it cocks by itself. So it's assisting in each one of the trigger presses to help it keep going. But again, like every firearm out there, when you press the trigger, it goes bang. So,
and you should always assume that as a good instructor, you always say
sure.
And I mean, assume it's about to go.
There's really loose definitions out there. No one's ever really sat down, and that's where the conundrum is for a lot of firearm owners to make sure that they're always staying legal. Is the laws vary state by state, and they also vary in the federal realm, and so we have to know what they are everywhere all the time, so we remain compliant.
So, what's the difference between a handgun and a revolver?
Well, a revolver is a handgun, but they also make revolvers that were rifles. Back in the old lever action days, the revolver was one of the first styles of you getting multiple shots in a single device. So it started out as a cap and ball pistol that you could load 6 to 8 rounds in, and it's since developed from there. But you're limited on how long it takes you to reload and keep going. But look at Jerry Michalik. I mean, he can shoot 6 rounds, reload 6 rounds in less than 3 seconds.
Whew. So these are these sharpshooters and competition shooters.
Sure.
Yeah.
We're talking to Dave Laird. He's the director of training at C2 Tactical. The one that I've gone to is the one there off of the I-10, and I believe that is Warner.
Yeah.
Yep.
And Dave, my question is this, because I've heard this several times before. We talk about the AR-15, the weapon that was used in the Florida shooting last week. And from a lot of gun owners, gun experts, the argument I get is that it just looks like a military weapon, but it fires the same as some traditional rifles. I don't know if I'm using the right terminology there.
Is there something fundamentally different about an AR style? Because I know that's just one brand. An AR style rifle than another rifle that fires the exact same round.
Yeah. So in the military, we have the M16, and there's several different variations of that, which means that you do have select fire, so you can shoot one round at a time, or you can switch the lever so you get 3 round bursts, or you can go fully automatic. It's been around since the 1950s. The civilian versions have been around since the 1960s. They come in every color, shape, and size. What makes them so appealing is they're so easy to use. My wife, she's 98 pounds. She loves it to death. But, I mean, it can be any color.
Can I follow up on something you just said?
Yeah.
The civilian version, though, does not have the option to fire 3 burst rounds or be fully automatic. That is illegal.
Well,
You can get a special permit, but I mean, but
all so no new ones could be manufactured after 1986. So the ones that are out there, they're out there, and once they finally deplete and go away, there'll be no more left. And that's the reason why they're so expensive. But there's also a licensing process to it as well. So right now, to get a fully automatic M16, you would have to pay somewhere in the range of $26,000 to $30,000. Plus, you'd have to go through an extensive background check, which doesn't really cost a lot. It's like $200.
But these are not being used in these shootings.
No,
I've heard people
not.
Refer to them as machine guns. They are not machine guns.
But more importantly is even if you go through all the trouble of doing that, the federal government says that transfer of ownership is me handing it to somebody. So since I'm the only person that's on that license or permit, I literally can't hand it to my wife and let her shoot it and experience it at the range. And that's the reason why we do trusts, so that if I die, it goes straight to the person who's in the trust. They don't have to reapply for the tax stamp. I mean, there is just so much stuff that we do to protect this right, which, hey, we're supposed to be born with. We're not supposed to defend it. This is our restriction against the government, not the other way around.
All right. We want you to chime in on our open mic line. We've got a gun expert here. We've got Dave Lehr, director of training at C2 Tactical. He has been training folks for over 15 years, a veteran. He'd volunteered with MCSO, was a citizen contractor in the Middle East. I mean, this is a guy that has a lot of knowledge. What kind of questions do you have for him? 602-200-2733. I got a lot of questions. Are you willing to stick around and have some conversations?
I certainly, you know, we need to have an open conversation.
Yes.
Whatever it takes so we can start making our schools safer.
Appreciate that.
Yeah. And again, I appreciate the fact that we could at least kind of get to the point where we're using the right terminology.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And
I struggle with that. I admit it.
Well,
and it's not
just earlier, Grant Woods made a comment and called it a machine gun. And I didn't correct him, but I knew that, no machine gun has been used. No automatic weapon has been used in any of these school shootings. They're all
correct.
Semi-automatic. And semi-automatic is the definition of, I don't know what percentage of guns you might have on sale at your store, but it's a high percentage. So most of them are semi-automatic.
Correct.
Muskets, not semi-automatic.
Thanks for the clarification.
Is that fair?
All right.
That's a big misconception. A lot of people say, hey, the Second Amendment was designed for the days of the muskets. Well, we had semi-auto firearms back then in the form of revolvers and such. So, ever since early time, I believe there was one that had 36 barrels back in the early 1700s.
Well, I think of the Gatling gun or some of those.
Yeah, the Gatling gun was
from the crank-operated
things. Late 1700s, early 1800s. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had stuff. I mean, we could see the future. And let's not forget, the British came here not just to take our muskets. They came here to take our powder, our ball, and our cannons. We had cannons.
Cannons,
okay.
I tell you. Yeah. Well, listen, again, Dave Laird, a gun expert, the director of training at C2 Tactical in studio. We're going to talk a little bit more about some of the weaponry and again, get to some of your phone calls.
Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
And again, in studio with us today as we do an entire show, not a segment, all 3 hours today on guns, schools, safety, solutions, ideas. And joining us is Dave Lehr, the director of training at C2 Tactical, a gun range. How do you describe C2? It's a range, it's training,
it's a store. It's a training. Yeah, it's a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
It's Disneyland for guns. So, both Pamela and I have gone there and taken courses with different firearms. Is there something we're missing? We just went through kind of the definitions. Is there something you hear people use or terminology use that or us use that you say that that's incorrect and that's not the proper way?
I mean, the biggest thing we hear all the time in the gun industry is people calling magazines a clip.
Yeah.
Terminology, especially for news reporters, radio hosts, things like that, it's so important that we're using the correct terminology because it shies the gun crowd away. They think that because they're uneducated, ill-informed, they can't get the facts right, that they don't want to listen. And we need to have that open discussion. So a clip is a solid metal device that will hold however many rounds. It attaches to a magazine and allows you to strip the bullets into the magazine. So clip feeds a magazine. A magazine can be internal or external of a firearm, and it uses a spring, and it is responsible for feeding the firearm so that it can fire. Okay, so there's two distinct differences. Both can be reused multiple times.
I think one of the reasons why that particular distinction is important, because last night at the CNN town hall, you had Marco Rubio, who has had an A-plus rating from the NRA, make this comment to a student when asked about his positions.
I traditionally have not supported looking at magazine clip size. And after this and some of the details I've learned about it, I'm reconsidering that position, and I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why. Because while it may not prevent an attack, it may save lives in an attack.
Your reaction to that, Dave?
Well, you know, again, his comments as a firearm expert, if that's what you're calling me, is he's ill-informed. You know, I myself know that, you know, you can put whatever magazine capacity limit you want on a gun, and I can shoot it faster than what you would expect. I mean, I want to say I can shoot between 7 and 11 rounds per second.
But you're a guy who's been training people for 15 years.
Sure.
You have military experience. You have.
But the military didn't really teach me that. Military focuses on rifle shooting, so we'll get into that here in a little bit. Pistol shooting came from my love of firearms and wanting to get better at my craft. And it came from me actually going out and seeking the best instructors that I could find in a country to make me better. But I mean, that information is available. I mean, that's the other thing, too. Social media is such open source information. There's so much stuff that you can find in there. And not taken in the proper context can actually be harmful to your education and training. That's why I want people to come and actually get training from people who can tell you how to use it in the proper context. But, you know, you can do whatever you want to magazines. There's more of those than there are firearms. So even if you ban them, good luck policing them all up or stopping people from using them. And yeah, still, we want to find solutions that will stop an active shooter, actually prevent it.
Let's talk about the realistic thing, because none of us have said this. There is not going to be gun confiscation, banning. I acknowledge I'm going to deal in the real world. And the real world is there are going to be a lot of firearms out there. I think we can all agree is keeping them out of the hands of people who would use them to commit crimes is a thing.
So
one of the challenges, though, Dave, with that is, and one of the things I hear a lot is, you know, law-abiding gun owners, laws that inconvenience them. The shooter in Florida, the guy in Vegas, a lot of these other mass shooters had no criminal background. The guy in Vegas didn't have a speeding ticket until he showed up with however many rifles and started shooting into a crowd. So there has to be something in between there. You know, we can't just wait for them to be criminals.
I agree.
So here's dead people.
But here's the thing, though. Every law you pass is reactionary. It's not proactive. It doesn't prevent anyone from going and still committing an act. It's afterwards you get to go back and prosecute them for violating that particular law.
Correct.
Okay? So passing more laws isn't going to stop criminal behavior. They're still going to do it.
Yeah.
So to answer your question, though, we're also asking our legislators to legislate new laws when they're not enforcing the old laws. Here we have somebody who has had the police call to his house 39 times. The FBI had several reports, didn't follow up on their investigation, had the opportunity to try and head this off the pass. They didn't do it. So if we create some new law, who's going to enforce it? The FBI, the ATF, the same people who are dropping the ball. Let's take a look at the 4473s that you have to fill out whenever you purchase a firearm.
That's the background check?
That's the background thing, check.
Which I've done when I've done. Okay.
So in 2015, on Black Friday alone, there were like 200,000 firearms sold in a single day using that form.
Uh-huh.
Okay. For the year, there were 400,000 that were rejected. Okay. So that means somebody answered all the questions on there, they got rejected. 40,000 of those were found to be fraudulent, and we only sought 14 for prosecution. Now, you tell me, if we have these forms that are already catching people, why are we only prosecuting 14 out of 40,000?
Now, that's a fair question. And the system is obviously broken at that point. So you have to get a system that works. And it sounds as though that one isn't. So tweaking that system and making sure that it is doing what it was created to do would
enforcing
be a first step.
Yeah.
But what I find interesting about this discussion, I mean, is there any wiggle room? I mean, is there any common sense gun debate or regulation that you would be open to?
All right, so there's another word that you had there. It was common sense. You say that around gun owners and they freak out.
And I know, and they shouldn't be, because the world has become so polarized that when I say common sense, a lot of people think that I'm trying to take on gun owners when I myself own them.
Sure.
I think the people in the middle, I think there's a lot more consensus when it comes to gun ownership and gun rights in this country than we give people credit for, but we only hear so much from the left and the right, and people like me who are gun owners but see kids getting massacred in schools. And frankly, as a talk show host, is sick and tired of talking about mass shootings from Vegas in October to the Texas shooting in November to Northern California in December to Florida in what, February? That's four massive shootings in like 5 months. Can you concede that there is some sort of issue that's mental health, that's a breakdown of the family, and it's guns?
Well, there's lots of issues, okay? And my point is that we don't need any more federal legislation to act as a nanny for our state. You have to remember the Constitution and the Bill of Rights were designed to limit government. The Bill of Rights are our rights that we're born with, and we're telling the government what they're not allowed to take away. Just as important as our freedom of speech, which is number one. Second is the Second Amendment, which allows us to defend our own personal lives. Now, they said the right to bear arms. They weren't just talking about guns. They were talking about any means of self-defense, up to and including the use of lethal force. And then as you go beyond the Bill of Rights and you start looking at the 10th and 14th Amendment, you start to see that it's up to the individual states, which is what we've been doing for a long time. Mm-hmm. Let's look at the states that have tried to legislate away the guns, like Chicago, Los Angeles, New York, New Jersey. And you'll see that they have the highest murder rates by firearms in the country. If we remove those, we go from being like number 14 on the national list down to number 104. They are responsible for the majority of crime and violence with guns in our country.
But
so if we want to fix
talking
the issue,
about criminals, and I've heard those numbers before, and I would just interject that Chicago's always brought up all the time, and I get
sure.
that. Those are criminals shooting other criminals, you know, and for the most part, we're talking about gang violence, for goodness sakes. We're talking about drug violence. And, you know, I don't know you well enough, Dave. I don't think you're that concerned about, you know, criminals shooting criminals on the streets of Chicago. These are not criminals yet that are shooting up schools, churches,
concerts,
concert halls. And I think so there's in where we would like to get into. OK, let's assume that a drug gang kingpin in Chicago is going to find a way to get a gun to defend his gang turf, and he's going to shoot other drug dealers. I don't like it, but I acknowledge it's what happens. These are these other people, and they slip through every crack we have. And I acknowledge, I don't know where you find that net to catch the kid in Florida, the guy in Vegas, the guy in Texas, these other people that get to the point where they just want to use these guns to stack a body count up, not in the commission of another crime. Do you know what I'm saying? We'll talk more about that, though, Dave. Seriously, I want to do that, and I know we have to take a quick break. Plus, we also want to get to some of your calls. We do have those on the way, too, 602-200-2733. We are talking about guns with an expert. Boy, we're learning, right? And hopefully we're using a lot of the right terminology, if nothing else. Dave Lair, the director of training at C2 Tactical, with us in studio. Some of your thoughts, let Dave respond to some of my craziness. That's all coming up next on Arizona's News Station.
KTAR News, 92.3 FM, Arizona's News Station. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes, making sense of the madness.
You know, if you've missed any of the show today, any of our discussion, our guests, calls about guns, safety, schools, shootings, etc., it lives online, Pamela, variety of different ways you can go back and listen.
And right now we have Dave Lair, the director of training at C2 Tactical, in studio right now. And we had a great discussion off the air that we're going to continue on the air right now, because there were a lot of interesting elements that we talked about there, Dave. And when it comes to gun laws and gun regulation and enforcing the ones that we currently have, I want to get your take, though, on what the president had tweeted this morning. He tweeted this: I will be strongly pushing comprehensive background checks with an emphasis on mental health, raise age to 21, and end sale of bump stocks. Congress is in a mood to finally do something on this issue, I hope. Background checks, raise the age, bump stock ban. Your thoughts on the president?
Okay. Well, his campaign promise was that he was going to enforce and make the Second Amendment stronger. And so these three issues right there, he's backpedaled on. There's 300 million people in the United States. 80 million of them are firearm owners. I would say that there's even more that we don't know about. Mm-hmm. Okay. Only 5 million of them support the NRA, and the NRA is supporting the same measure. You know, I've been around guns.
The NRA isn't supporting these measures.
Oh, yes, they are.
Wayne LaPierre this morning came out and talked about not supporting the increase in the background checks and raising the age.
They may not support the age, but they are talking about the bump stock issue. And the danger here with the bump stock is that is a brand name, like Q-tip is to cotton swab.
Okay.
There's other things, and so they're not just calling it the bump stock ban, but they're also talking about rate increasing modifications or devices. Okay. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of us gun owners, we do things to our triggers, whether it's buying an aftermarket product and dropping it in, or it's getting ours smoothed out.
You can literally machine.
Metal when it comes
gunsmiths that can work.
Correct.
On.
When metal comes from the factory, it's stamped out, mass produced, and so that little bit of friction that you might feel in the trigger actually causes a 3-pound weight shift each time you shoot. So it's going to affect your accuracy. And where I'm being held responsible legally in a court of law for every shot that I take, I want to make sure that it's the exact same poundage every single time.
Got it.
So when they go through and smooth it up, the byproduct is that it could be considered rate increasing, when really I'm just trying to be more accurate and have a smoother trigger.
By making your gun more efficient.
Consistent. Yeah. I want to make sure it's 3.5 pounds every single time. So every single one of my pistols is modified to 3.5 pounds. Now, can I shoot it faster because of that?
And you say 3.5 pounds, and again, I just want to assume everybody understands that's the force required.
Correct.
For you to pull the trigger for a bullet to be expelled.
Okay. So that's the amount of force it takes to overcome the internal mechanism of the firearm to finally release the striker or firing pin.
We got some questions. I got one online.
Okay,
great. Can I ask a question of you? This one came in. I know the answer, but I'm going to let our expert answer it for you. It says, can AR-15 civilian types be used in a fully automatic setting? If someone was to buy an AR-15, could they use that gun fully automatic? Corey asked that question.
Okay. Well, no. The way it comes from the factory, if you have it, is you have to press the trigger and it will fire one round. It will auto-load the next round. You have to release the trigger and press the trigger again. If you do anything to the firearm to make it operate anything other than that, you are going to be held probably under state law and federal law
for
that thing.
Yeah.
The other issue here is look at Australia, where they've completely banned firearms altogether. There are people who are building guns in their garage that are fully automatic. So passing more laws. I mean, we've already got a number of them on the books, and they're not enforcing what we already have in place. What is one more gun law going to do? And you have to remember that it's not the government that gives us this right. We're born with it. We're born with the right to defend ourselves, to own firearms, and it's the Bill of Rights that puts a restriction on them, not us.
Okay. Well, you know what? As a gun owner myself, I agree with you that families should have the ability to protect themselves by any way, shape, or form.
Okay.
I'm fine with that. But when you talk about the Second Amendment, and a lot of times what you hear is the right shall not be infringed upon, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Do you support the fact that lunatics, crazed lunatics, they should not be able to get a weapon, that felons should not be able to get a weapon, that unsupervised children should not be able to get a weapon? I think most people, and I'll give you an opportunity to answer that, but I think most people would say, yes, I don't want crazed lunatics or convicted felons or unsupervised children to have access to weapons.
Okay. And we already have laws in place for all that stuff. But
that means that it has been infringed upon.
But you got three separate different things here. Okay. So you have to understand, what was the first one?
It's mentally unstable, crazed lunatics.
Mentally unstable.
There. Okay.
All right. So
sickos is
that's
what
we
call them.
So you have to understand, people who are mentally incompetent, they cannot make proper decisions. So that's the reason why they lose their right to vote as well as to own firearms, because they've been found mentally incompetent. So that's an easy one. Felons. All right, so felons have already proven that they're not willing to follow our laws and abide by our laws, and so we're stripping them of all their rights, not just their right to own a firearm, but also their right to vote. So as a felon, and there's also a process to earn your rights back. If I write a bad check, and it happens to be for a lot of money, so it's a felony, I can go back to the court and say, look, I'm not irrational, I was just stupid, and I can get my rights back to me. As far as children and guns and things like that, you have to, you know, I started teaching my kids about firearms at age 5. You know, they started physically handling them at age 6. But my nieces and nephews, I've never taken them shooting. I've never worked with them at all because they have a different mental capacity. And their parents, of course, don't own guns, wouldn't reinforce what I was teaching them. So,
right.
But that's up to the individual family. So
fair enough.
The whole purpose is that we don't infringe on anybody, mm-hmm. okay? But there's people who have infringed on us and proven that they'll do it time and time again.
Okay, Dave Laird, again, the director of training at C2 Tactical. I'm so glad you're in here. It's interesting to have a rational debate and conversation instead of people retreating to their reflective sides, and I welcome it. We may not see things eye to eye, but I welcome this kind of discussion.
Well, I don't think you and I are on either extreme of this.
No, not at all. I guess my question would be this, and I've asked Bruce this before. What are staunch supporters of the Second Amendment afraid of?
Okay. Well, the Bill of Rights was to tell the British government, you can't take our stuff ever again. And before we form a new federal government, we need to ensure that the power rests in the people. And so the same fear still exists today. Look at all the gun laws we already have in the books that they're not enforcing, that they're throwing out on misdemeanors and so forth. And they're bargaining with criminals, using gun laws to force criminals into some sort of plea bargain deal. So what is one more law going to pass and do for the people who support the Second Amendment except lose their own rights and privileges? We're afraid, and I don't want to speak for everybody, one of my fears is that we slowly strip away our rights until it's no longer there. I think we've already given enough leverage.
So you're arguing the slippery slope argument that
Correct.
If you give
that the military,
you give on one thing, that then the next time you give on that, and okay.
Okay, so you talk about making sure that things can't be taken away from us again, all right? If the military wanted to come take our guns, they could. They've got tanks, they've got drones, they've got a lot of stuff. If they want, they could get them. That hasn't happened.
So, you know, and a lot of people have said that sort of stuff before. I don't even want to go down that road. You have to understand it never happens overnight. It's not like, hey, the knock on your door tomorrow morning, this is how it happens. It's through the slow attrition of your rights and freedoms gradually over time. And we've made exception and upon exception upon exception. And here we've been talking about guns the whole time. We haven't stopped. We haven't started talking about how to actually protect these students. We haven't actually said what will stop mass shootings. And this is where we need to start talking about mental health. We need to start talking about putting security systems into school.
I agree.
We need to start protecting the kids and stop talking about the gun or some flagrant moron that grabbed one and did something evil with it.
Well, the gun is a big part of this discussion.
It's a small part.
We can disagree on that. And hence the reason why we've had a three-hour dedication to this conversation. But I do concede the point that we do need to talk about security and upping the security within our schools. So if you'll stick around, I'd love to hear some of the technology that you were sharing with Bruce and I that are in some schools now or that are being developed to enhance the security of the schools themselves.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Cool. Safe school or safer schools might be a good way to put it, in some of the new technology that is out there. Again, Dave Laird with C2 Tactical in studio with us. We continue our show dedicated entirely to firearms, school safety, mental health, the law. Whew. We've touched on a lot of things today. We'll continue that. It's all coming up next right here on Arizona's News Station.
KTAR News, 92.3 FM, Arizona's News Station. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes, making sense of the madness.
We're bringing it to a close, our entire show dedicated on guns, weaponry, safety, schools, and Dave Laird, the director of training at C2 Tactical, is with us. But Dave has an extensive background, not only in the military, with firearms, private contractor, been there, done that.
And Dave, we talked a little bit about what's been missing in this whole conversation, and you brought up school security.
Yep.
So what are some of the things that you are seeing, having been in this field, that would enhance the security of our schools?
Fantastic question. So the big trouble right now is all the campuses have been designed for fire drills to get the students out as quickly as possible.
And that goes back to like some huge fire they had in the
school
in the
60s. We haven't lost a child in a school fire in over 60 years. Okay. So, you know, and the quarterly training that they have going on with fire drills makes it even better. We need a separate alarm system with a separate siren for active shooters. Mm-hmm. Every teacher needs to have around their neck a little life alert that allows them to press that button, and every single door in the building gets locked.
Oh, wow.
They have a smoke system. They have strobe lights, all this completely fills the hallways with smoke and lights. Police officers can then enter the building. They can use thermal vision, and they can find whoever it is, wherever it is. But they also have real-time tracking, so they can track where the shots are, where the guy's traveling to, but he's going to be completely disoriented in that environment.
This sounds expensive.
Sure. It's like, it's, you know, so recently I found a report where they said it was about $400,000 for the system to be installed. Okay. That sounds astronomical.
Yeah.
But if there's 2,000 students in that school, you're roughly talking $200 per student.
Okay.
And so we don't need the federal government to do that. We can band together as parents, get a GoFundMe account. Mm. Let's start pushing our board of directors, our local school education, say, listen, I want all of our parents to donate whatever they have. And I'll tell you what, I'd be one of the first ones to be throwing $1,000 in that direction and say, I'll do whatever it takes. Let's get it done. But training has to be part of that, too. These drills have to be done quarterly. It needs to be realistic training, probably not with kids on campus, so we can properly train the staff on what they should do. Because right now they got all the students kind of huddled in a corner, and we need to stray away from that because that's dangerous. We want to spread them out across the room. But lastly, there's also a bill that I've been working on for some time now, and it is a less lethal bill that allows campus carry for CCW holders that is less lethal. So
less
this
lethal.
Is batons, pepper spray, flashlights,
tasers,
stun guns, whatever. So for those people who say we got to have guns, you know, and everyone else says we don't, this is a way of trying to meet the middle and
see
how this program works. So now the next time someone goes into a college classroom and there's 20 CCW holders there, they can use those tasers and stun guns.
Non-lethal stuff.
And pepper spray and see what this does.
Keep us posted on where that goes and how that develops.
That's interesting.
Because I like that. I think that's a solid idea.
It's a middle of the road for now.
Agreed.
And let's see how it works. And because the biggest thing is like, I feel like everybody says, well, we just can't trust people to be responsible. But I want to see all violent crime, not just firearms. I want to see all violent crime stopped on college and our children's campuses so they can go there and learn like they're supposed to.